Welcome to the Heartbreak Kids Podcast, where we explore what connects us all in our yoga practice and in our lives. This is where I talk to people about their stories, who they are, what they've been through, and where they're going. And in this podcast, that's what we explore. I believe deep down inside, we're all connected, which explains why we bring ourselves to the top of our mat every day. Welcome to the Heartbreak Kids. So welcome to the next edition of the Heartbreak Kids. I'm here with Matthew Darling. Matthew Darling was one of my very first teachers in Ashtanga Yoga. I've made several trips up to Ashtanga Yoga, Michigan to practice with him and apprentice under him. And I'm really grateful to have him on the show today. So thank you, Matthew, for joining us.
Thank you, Taylor. It's quite a full circle journey to be here with you, and very impressed with the work that you've been doing. And I'm so excited to share with your audience. And I've never even listened to a podcast, let alone been interviewed on one. So here we go, man.
Yeah, let's do this. So let's give a little bit of back story to for the people that don't really know anything about you or where you've come from. Why don't you give them a little backstory about how you showed up to yoga on your first time?
Yeah, well, I showed up. A bit of my backstory is, aside from the yoga, I started a journey of recovery. And, that kind of got me into the place to where I was open to yoga, because I had a friend who was traveling to India. And I remember in my early sobriety, a guy that I knew, I got sober when I was 18, in 1987. And this friend of mine was following a guru in India. And I was just like, I was really not there. I hadn't really, found the place within myself to seek, the spiritual path, to, really understand and develop my awareness of self and consciousness.
Yeah. What guru was it?
He was in Pondicherry. It wasn't Aurobindo. I can't really remember the name of the teacher. He did come here, and I went and met him.
But you weren't ready for it at that point, though.
No, I wasn't. No.
What year was that?
That was probably the late 80s, early 90s, around then.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And you were just getting sober around that time, too.
Yeah, I got sober in 87. I got kind of introduced to, my friend's path. And then in 93, I was having a difficult time kind of in between places. I just moved back from living in Colorado for a while and not really too grounded in being back in the Michigan area. And I was at an Al-Anon meeting, and a lady heard my share, and she invited me to a meditation group with the Self-Realization Fellowship. And it was kind of my initiation into my inquiry into the path of, understanding.
Yeah. I mean, and so your first yoga was really more meditation than actually asana.
Correct.
Wow.
Yeah.
And did you take to it really fast, or were you skeptical about it, or was it just seemed like something that was natural for you?
It seemed familiar, but it was I hadn't really gone through the self-realization process yet. I was just kind of showing up at their services on Sundays, and I would, just sit, and I was recognizing how busy my mind was, because they would do a period of meditation with that. And so I just tried to, kind of sit around the fringe for a while, and then there was some asana classes being offered next door. So I kind of drifted over there after a while and started seeking that out, which then, just kind of snowballed along the way. The exposure was there wasn't really a whole lot going on with, you know, it was a very young internet time, and there wasn't really a lot of awareness. You know, there was yoga journal articles and stuff, but, you know, finally I found out that, you know, the yoga that I was being introduced to with the postures was coming from Ashtanga yoga. So
gotcha.
I started finding that the physical form was finding its way more interesting for me. And by the time I really started to understand what it was that I was practicing, somebody just said, you got to go check out this guy in California. So I went out and visited Tim Miller, and the rest is just kind of, you know, opening up opportunities from Tim to studying with a lot of Western teachers. And then I made my way to India in 1999.
Gotcha. And how was your first experience like practicing with Tim Miller?
Oh, well, that was, it just blew my mind, 'cause it was the first Mysore class I'd really done. And at the end, I sat there at the door and thanked everybody on their way out. It was just really, you know, like just that feeling like this is beneficial. This is something that there's a certain, reverence here.
Yeah.
You know, Tim carried himself real well and he was really steeped in, you know, the understanding, and really, he was really grounded in, you know, what he was offering. Yeah. And such a kind man.
Yeah. I'm wondering, you know, like, you know, because this all seems like it happened pretty fast for you, you know? So I'm like wondering, like, you know, with the addiction and, you know, like, you know, when you got into yoga, it's like, were you still dealing with like the, you know, the consequences of your actions like before, even when you were practicing with Tim Miller and when you were, you know, doing self-realization and like finding these, you know, asana practice, like, were you still dealing with like, you know, your recovery?
Well, I was still attending meetings, if that's what you mean. I was still like working the steps. It didn't substitute anything. If anything, for me, it felt like stage two recovery. You know, it felt like, okay, the 12 steps have introduced me to something in myself. Help me develop some morals and ethics, some character, some way to address the world in a positive, healthy manner. But the yoga just kind of brought it more into my daily living. I mean, yes, I woke up every day and, you know, would face the day with the intention and the commitment to not drinking or taking drugs. But even in the 12-step program in AA, they talk about, you know, emotional recovery. But the yoga just kind of, it gave me a little bit more of a feeling of excitement and depth to that.
Yeah. I guess I'm wondering, you know, there was no resistance at all from, you know, any of the things that you had done in your past. Like there was no resistance. Well, I mean, there was no resistance in your practice, you know, like it all just like kind of flowed, it sounds like. And, you know, the people that I'm teaching in the Trini Foundation, you know, there is a resistance. There's a wall. There's a barrier between like these, you know, this, maybe it's guilt and shame and that sort of stuff in the beginning. But then all of a sudden it's like, you know, they have this wall about like doing this physical practice because, you know, it's good for them. And it sounds like you didn't have that at all.
No. Well, you know, I'd always been active and physical. Whether it was exercise or so, the yoga kind of, it just felt like, you know, this was a setting that I could, you know, that I could just kind of, I don't know, not, so, I don't want to say so much like escape to like substance, but it brought me in and there was no like hangover to it. There was no, you know, it was more revealing than it was distracting. And so the physical part, because I was in my, you know, early 20s was, and you know, I mean, we all have our, abilities and we all have our challenges. And so, you know, I was trying to harmonize those along with, you know, working the steps and doing the program. But I didn't really, what you're describing with the people who are doing it in early recovery, I didn't really come to it as a part of my recovery.
Gotcha.
I had already established myself fairly well in recovery over maybe 6 years. And then this was just kind of another layer to, you know, process and work through things.
Yeah. Gotcha. I mean, it sounds like, you know, your journey was, you know, I mean, like I said, it sounds like it was kind of flowing, you know, and that's pretty awesome to, you know, to kind of hear, because, you know, the people that are listening to this podcast or the people that are in the Trinity Foundation, it's like, it's sort of like you took care of your program, but then on the other side, yeah, like you did this yoga, which gave you like living the program or something like that, which is really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was, I mean, it wasn't like it was easy. And the tough thing was, which is so, I feel is so beneficial and available now, is information. There wasn't a lot of information at the time. So there was a lot of, you know, stumbling blocks for me. I didn't really have a proper teacher. You know, I didn't go live with Tim. I just went and practiced with Tim for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Then when I moved back to Colorado, I would practice with, you know, Richard Freeman or Annie Pace when I could.
Yeah.
But most of the time I was just trying to, you know, stumble through this stuff. And I mean, I know very different in the way that people have access to it today. You know, the teacher can really support you and work to recognize your individual needs. And I mean, that's what, you know, I offer in my setting, as to know, like, okay, you know, like you're describing, this is where you're at in your life. You have this job, you have this responsibility, you know, whether it's recovery or a family, you know, you have these injuries that you've gone through. This is your history. And as best as you can explain it to me, I'm going to prescribe to you the right amount to do that's responsible. I didn't really have that.
Yeah.
You know, I touched down every once in a while here and there, but I was trying to figure that out myself.
Gotcha.
until I got into India. And then I had that exposure, and
yeah,
I learned that process.
So what was your first experience like to India? You know, since you kind of led us there, like what was your first experience like getting off the plane in India?
It just settled on my entire being. It just like this.
In a good way or bad?
Like was, well, you know, you walk off the plane and it just like hits you.
Right.
It like, it just enters every area of you. And you know, what it totally changed my perception. I mean, sight, sound, all my senses were stimulated in all new ways, just being at India, aside from going to the practice. But just that, you know, walking into the culture and being in the environment of India was like, you know, my sense doors, you know, I smelt the worst smells that I ever smelled. I smelt the best smells, saw the brightest colors, saw the ugliest sights, and, you know, everything, heard, you know, crazy sounds and annoying sounds, but then I heard the most beautiful things. It was just, you know, really opening to what, you know, yoga describes, or what, you know, Patabi Joyce always talked about, that we're cleansing and purifying our sense organs.
Right.
And so that really became really clear to me right away. It just felt like I was like vacuum sealed with this pressure of like heat and dust and dirt and wonderful, you know, tastes and horrible sound, horns beeping and terror on the road, and but yet calmness in the, you know, out in the jungle or away from the city. Yeah, it was quite an adventure. And then you throw the practice on that and meeting people from all around the world. It was very stimulating.
Right. And so what was your first practice like?
Well, Patabi Joyce, he had his, you know, interesting process where he'd have you come in the room and register, and he would ask you, you know, where you're from, if you sent a letter, who was your teacher, and he'd ask you, he'd be writing this down in his book. He had, you know, a log book, and then he'd ask you, what your mother's name was, you know, and then he'd have you pay him the rupees and you were in. And when and then he'd tell you a time to come. So he'd assign you a time because of the room in the room at the time, there was only 14 people practicing and the rest of us would queue up the stairs to the roof sometimes in later years.
And how many people were there in the beginning?
I'd say there was probably around maybe 50 or 60. Yeah, it was around the holidays. It was, I think I got there around Thanksgiving, and Sharat was on his first tour of teaching on his own in South America. And so Patabi Joyce's son, Manju, came back from the States and was assisting his father. It was like,
yeah, first that's time. Really cool to experience.
Yeah, it was the first time he had done that. They'd been together in, I don't know how many years, but a long time. And so that was my first time in the room, a month with Manju and Patabi Joyce. And then Sharat came back, and I mean, Sharat was in his mid-20s. And just, you know, holding his role as assistant. And Patabi Joyce was still pretty available. We'd do conferences. We'd have, like, you know, probably only 20 people would come in the afternoon for conference and ask questions. But it was, you know, it was just getting that familiar feeling of how to communicate in this environment, how to interact with this person that has a bit of a language barrier, definitely a cultural barrier, and just it, but he was very welcoming, and he invited you in, and he would, you know, give you the chance to be known. He would give you the audience. And yeah. So that was really helpful in, you know, deciding, you know, one, is this for me? Does, you know, it wasn't like, you know, very hidden or mystical. I mean, it had that quality in it, but the mystical quality in the practice there was more what you were looking for in yourself. And that's what I came to find. It's like, I remember sitting there at a moment feeling like I came all this way. And I'm sitting with this person, and I just felt like it was all of a sudden I was at my own truth. You know, he was available to help me or support me in understanding that. And that's really what I was wanting to work through.
And did you stay for like 6 months, or how long did you stay?
My plan was to stay for 6 months, but I was with my first wife and we stayed for 4, and we were having a tough time just with the travel and all. It's newlyweds. And so we left after 4 months and came back, made our way slowly back to the States on an around the world ticket. And then eventually within, you know, the next probably 3 or 4 months, we had divorced.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's quick.
Yeah, it was my first marriage. I mean, it looked great on paper, but yeah, you just don't know.
Were you headed in different directions because of the practice?
You know, I don't think it was, I mean, I don't think I could make it that simple. I think it was just, I really don't understand it to this day, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know that we had some basic fundamental different feelings about a few things, but it was just a decision, really.
Yeah. And so I'm wondering, did you start teaching as soon as you got back from India?
Not my first trip. My first trip, I came back, started working on where I was going to be. We were living in limbo because we were living in Colorado. And then I decided to move back to Michigan and get back into my jewelry business. So I was making jewelry independently, doing art shows and juried art shows and traveling around doing that, doing custom jewelry. And so then I, Pattabhi Jois was coming for a tour in the United States, and I decided to go out to Colorado and practice with him for a couple weeks there. And that was the, like, a couple months after I got back. And so I went out and practiced in Colorado. It was there that he, after I practiced, they had an intermediate group first, and then a primary group first, and then an intermediate group second. And I did the primary group, and I was doing primary the whole time I was in India the first trip. I really didn't have any intention to move on, and I was still, you know, working out the depth of my practice as far as, you know, getting my mind established, and then, you know, allowing my body to come along with that. But so he invited me to, the next day he said, come to intermediate. And man, I was like a fish out of water. It was,
yeah,
it was crazy.
Well, I mean, for a lead intermediate to be your first, you know, class is just brutal.
I know, my drishti was all over the place. I was,
you didn't know where you were supposed to, like, you didn't know what poses were coming?
No. I mean, I knew some of them.
How did you stumble through that whole thing?
I watched the first group, and I had watched in Mysore, when you're waiting for the next spot, you get a seat to, but there were really no books that had it, or I guess the videos were out, but you really couldn't find that stuff as easily as you can today. So, and I really wasn't all that interested in more. I was just kind of content with, you know, taking my darshan and doing my practice and, you know, finding out what was there. I wasn't really looking to, I'm not one to really, I guess, push myself, into that. Yeah.
For what reason did you not want to do more? Just because you wanted to settle into what you were doing?
I guess I have just an overall, like, contentment in myself where, you know, if I can find that place of access, I don't, and maybe this is from, you know, establishing myself early in recovery. I'm not going to push myself to get, you know, too far or too high. And, you know, maybe it held me back in the accomplishment of, you know, doing the series more, but I just was like, you know, this is okay for me. I was just able to, like, you know, I found something and I just liked savoring it. I didn't like, yeah, you know, the responsibility of upholding it. I just, like, you know, I knew I could access it. And really, you know, once I got more established in doing the intermediate series, yes, it felt really like I had found another depth and another layer. I mean, I can remember some really intense experiences that I, you know, still don't really understand all that well, that I went through with, you know, phenomenon of just, you know, ability that I couldn't really explain or didn't know where it came from. And I don't know if that stuff scared me, because of my reckless past. I don't know if that stuff scared me and kept me at that place, but it definitely, you know, just, I never really craved or desired or asked for more.
Yeah. I'm wondering what your view is on, you know, like, your practice today. Is it a lot of, you know, that you're teaching kind of this steepingness and this depth of practice, or is it that you're teaching a bunch of asanas, or how do you view your, you know, your practice and your teaching with respect to, like, with what you were just talking about?
Well, I guess the way I approach my practice is kind of what I always say is our family motto: you get what you get and you don't make a fit. I just, you know, I just let it tell me on any given day what I'm working with. And I accept that. I mean, I aspire to process through, you know, where others have guided me or supported me or shown me. And I feel like I have a wealth of information on that. And with my students, I kind of give them, I show them that respect or, you know, timely fashion of really honoring them or allowing them to, you know, reveal or expose themselves and myself, you know, to each other and just see where it is. And, you know, sometimes they want more and ask for more. And you know, I witness that more as an observation in India and Mysore with people wanting to get places and sometimes not being happy with what they found when they got there. And also experienced it with, you know, people who had very, what appeared to be very advanced practices and really weren't all that wonderful to hang out with. you know, they really didn't, you know, feel all that connected.
Right.
So it's just kind of like I'm still working through my stuff and I'm still, you know, daily trying to understand who I am because, I mean, Taylor, when I really look at it and I look at the role of teacher, you know, and I'm not an educated man, never took a college course. I've got a really good street sense and I have a good personality that works well with people. I really am outgoing and excitable and enthusiastic. I don't have a great depth of knowledge of a lot of the things that people study once they get into yoga. I mean, I have awareness of, you know, some of the texts, I have awareness of, you know, some of the physical, you know, therapeutic ways to approach the practice and some anatomy knowledge, but I'm not versed in many of that. I mean, my resume for being a yoga teacher is basically that, of just, simply being able to enter into knowing and understanding relationship with people and trying to, you know, support them along with like sponsoring in the program, you know, the 12 steps. And this is the process that we go through and let's see how, you know, how that, what that reveals for you. And we're in no hurry. There's no urgency. There's no finish line. So let's just see what it reveals. You know, we don't have, you know, time restraints on us. So that's, you know, that's kind of the process that I work within myself. And that's, you know, the way I work with my students. Yeah. It gives me a chance, not just to get to know them, but even get to know myself with them. Because, you know, I mean, there's a lot of confusing stuff that goes on, especially today with yoga. And, you know, there's quite a learning curve. I mean, people like in the 90s, when I got into it, there weren't, you know, being a yoga practitioner or a teacher was kind of like black magic or witchcraft, you know, but today you could be toasted and honored at a party. You're like the evolved person of the world if you're a yoga teacher.
And if you've been, that's scary.
Yeah, I know. If you've been to India. So there's this misconception and there's a lot of people that are searching like I was. And so, you know, there's sometimes this misconception of, you know, forgetting that, you know, I've got these, I'm doing my work too. You know, I'm doing my work and I'm right.
What I hear you saying
I'm right
like
there with you.
Student.
Yeah. I'm right. Yeah, I'm right there with you. And I will remain teachable. You know, I'm not trying to dazzle you with, you know, mystical powers. I'm just, you know, if you want to talk about, you know, the Big Ten championship, even though I didn't watch it and I've kind of, gotten off sports, you know, it's kind of something that I've inventoried and chosen not to spend my time with much, but you know, I'm a worldly guy. I've got some, you know, blue collar, no collar experience. And I can hang with mostly anybody, you know, and I'm of this world. And that's, my teacher was like that too. Patabi Joyce was like that too. You know, he definitely was very steeped in what he knew. He was, you know, had such a depth of knowledge of this yoga practice, but I don't find that there's lines of separation that take this yoga practice away from many different things that people don't find within their religion, within, you know, the 12 steps or my recovery. It's really not all that different. We can make it mean different things and dress it up all different ways and convince ourselves that you know, it's better or different than something else, but it's equal. And it's just what you choose and where you choose to go, you know, seeking for it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm wondering about, you know, I know Patabi Joyce like meant a lot to you, and mm-hmm. with all of these accusations that, you know, have been coming up, like how have you dealt with that stuff?
Well, very carefully. There was always some information, that was available that didn't really seem to me when I heard it, that it was, it seemed like confusion. The way I hear it today, it's not confusion. The way I hear it today is it's accusations. And so it's complicated. And, I feel, you know, I might have my personal relationship to it, my emotional relationship to it, my mental, thoughts around it, but it's in this time, it can be a trap to view my opinion. And so I'm careful. I know my experience, what I had, and I can't say it hasn't changed it. It has definitely, a lot of the information that's come forward has definitely, it's definitely, gotten me to, I guess, search a little bit more into it. What I found when I've done that is I think that the principle of what I learned is a solid foundation. The personality is flawed. And I knew that though. I mean, Patabi Joyce used to give me sometimes medical advice, and I would have been a fool to follow it because he's not a medical doctor. You know, so I didn't totally, you know, overwhelm myself with, you know, blind faith. And so the stuff that's come out though, I feel bad for the effects on, you know, the human spirit. You know, I feel horrible that people have been affected like this. I mean, I'm a very sensitive person. I'm a very compassionate person. I have, you know, respect for people and their process. But it's hard for me to know in context, really, you know, what is being described with, you know, experiences from 20 years ago, from 15 years ago, and with people that I don't know, with somebody that I knew, and, you know, just what went on and what happened. But I can say that going forward, there is a strong sense of responsibility. And I think there always has been, because nobody within the community that I had respect for or venerated towards has come up against these accusations or scrutiny. I've heard a bit recently, you know, about, like I'm in a position as a privileged white male, which I just want to declare is not, when I look at the 12 steps, is not one of my defects of character. If anything, right. My privileged white male is something that I use very responsibly. You know, I found that this life path has given me more sensitivity and more awareness into that. The temptations all around are there. the opportunity for me to drift back into viewpoints of, you know, whether it's my family members that have had, you know, displayed any type of racism, whether it's sexist remarks that, people made in the 70s about women and attitudes. These are all things that, I am reworking in my consciousness and in my actions to evolve. And so I'm just hopeful that, you know, the people who are hurt are finding their way to getting over the anger, understanding, you know, their story. Because I know for myself, I'm like, you know, we have these relationships where it's like a 50-50 responsibility. And I know for myself through my recovery, it's unfortunate if you're misled or misguided or misrepresented or accosted or you know, taken advantage of or you know, had horrible behavior thrust upon you. But I'm 100% responsible for my 50% of any given relationship. So I have to work within myself. I do have responsibility to my community. A lot of them don't even really know any of these things that are going on. They're just not in tune to it. Some of us who are in this, in the percentage, the small percentage, of people who have gotten this close or have worked through this method enough to be, you know, teachers in the method, you know, it seems like it's something that's being worked out a lot more aggressive through that. And the accountability is being demanded through that. But we as teachers, whether it's, you know, that we practice with Patabi Joyce for 40 years or, you know, now practicing with Sharat, we still have the same responsibilities.
Yeah.
We still, I mean, with your teacher, how he's dealt with it, how does that feel for you? With how he's recognized his grandfather.
Yeah, I mean, you know, honestly, it's given me a lot of reflection and it's made me like reevaluate a lot of the things and, you know, this thing that we call tradition and parampara, and it's had me kind of go back through all of this stuff. And it's been hard for me too. I think there's been a lot of right things that have been done, and I think there's a lot of things that could have been better. You know, so, I mean, I'm kind of dealing with it the same way as what you're dealing with it, but it obviously from a different standpoint, I guess. You know, like Shroud has gotten a bunch of, heat based off of his Instagram post and his, you know, his acknowledgement of it and that it wasn't good enough and all of that stuff. And I didn't believe all of that. I do think that it could have been done a little bit better, but I think that for the most part, I felt like the acknowledgement of it gave a deep breath of fresh air because it needed to be talked about. You know, it's just like our sobriety, Matthew. It's like, you know, you're only as sick as your secrets. And like, if a community wants to be sick, you just keep a bunch of secrets. If you want to be healthy, if you want to have open dialogue, you know, you want to do a fifth step, you want to do these things with your recovery and you want to get better, it has to be addressed. You know, it's part of the reason why, you know, like I'm having these difficult conversations on, you know, the podcast, you know, this podcast is not about Patabi Joyce, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, but it is about like bringing light where it needs to be. And, mm-hmm. you know, so I'm processing it in the same way.
You know, it's tough too, because who's the one who gives the answer? Who's the authority? You know, I mean, Sharat definitely stands in a position of, you know, the lineage, but, you know, I mean, there's a lot of teachers that were there before Sharat even started his practice. And so those teachers are like in their silence are given a hard time when who's asking the question and who gives the direct answer. I mean, there's so much information out there. There's so many chat places and it's like, nobody's going to be satisfied. I mean, it's really, it's really complex. And
I came to this conclusion though. I came to the conclusion that I was responsible for my community and my community alone.
Totally.
And I needed to make sure that it didn't happen at my place, that the students were informed. And if they needed to talk about it, they could.
Yeah.
I needed to make sure that they understood if they didn't want an adjustment, they could tell us, or they could, you know, take one of the coins on the desk, or, you know, like, they, like that was open to them. I had to have, you know, conferences about it. You know, we have a lot of young people at our shala, and it's like, you know, it's just not okay to not address. And we did, and, you know, I'm responsible for my community, and, and, you know, Sherratt's not responsible for mine. You know, it's like, he's responsible for his, you know, and I'm responsible for mine. And I think that, you know, doing the right things actually feels good, because then all of a sudden it's like, you get rid of this pink elephant in the room, or you get rid of all of this like heaviness. We've done a lot at Ashtanga Yoga Columbus to make sure that people feel comfortable and safe in the room, because it means a lot. It does. We're vulnerable when we're in there. Totally. That's what really is heartbreaking about the, you know, the whole situation to me, is that I came in really broken, and, you know, just based off of what you were talking about, I was more broken than you, like, if we're comparing brokenness. And so, you know, in that vulnerable state, if I, in the beginning, if I would have caught wind of something like that, it'd have been game over. I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you today.
Really?
You know, like, I mean, you know, because, you know, I have sexual stuff that had happened in my past, and, you know, that I felt guilt and shame about, that I wasn't even, I wasn't responsible for, you know, and to have that, to come up, and, you know, in the beginning of my journey, I would have really struggled big time, man. I'd have really struggled.
Yeah. I think I mean, sex itself is a very complex issue, you know. Most people just, you know, going through the development of early stages of life, stumble with it, and there's definitely, I across the board, I'm sure, a lot of mishandling it, just how you come into it. And so, you know, it does create a certain unclear, you know, awareness. You know, some people, like you're saying, might have had these things happen, and they don't know how to address them still. And it's so unfortunate. I mean, I have a daughter right now who's 14 years old, and I'm trying to help her, you know, maneuver through understanding. And, you know, it's overwhelming. I mean, the amount of information that's out there, and, you know, just how do you deal with it in real time, you know, because you can't, I mean, so often do I see something that I want to comment on. And I mean, this has got to be the situation too, with some of the silence of it too. You comment on one thing, man, it takes you down the rabbit hole. It's like you're defending yourself against the whole world. I mean, it's not just like sitting in a room having a conversation with your community, but it's like you're in, you know, Europe, you're in Africa, you're in China, and everybody's weighing in because you posted something that commented on it. And so it's really quite overwhelming.
Yeah, it definitely. Internet has changed, and social media has changed everything, I feel like. So, well, I want to ask you one last question, and it really revolves around your personal practice and why you continue to show up after so many years. And so, like, what is your big why?
Well, like I said, I mean, I'm not, I can't rely on, you know, having a higher levels of education. I didn't go on for schooling. I'm a pretty simple guy, and I just know that, there's a sustaining energy to this. I'm not really that, smart, and I'm not saying that to give myself a hard time. I've got access to a depth of wisdom, and I know, aside from my intellect, which gets challenged daily and moment to moment, my emotional, mental, and physical state. But when I align myself daily with the practice, I feel it gives me a chance. It gives me a sense of hope. It's a refined skill and awareness that even though I'm faced with these things, you know, not letting the past be the past, but it gives me some hope of moving forward. and to be of service. You know, that's my main thing. I mean, that's what I've come to understand through this, is to be available. I often reference my youth when I was in just a bad space in my teen years, and my mom put a poster on my door, I remember, and I don't know why I never just tore it off with my anger and confusion, but it was a lighthouse, and it said, "When you see the light, shine it for others." And that's just the way, you know, that's really the only way for me. Through recovery, you sit at tables with strangers, people you know, for years, I don't even know their last name. And I sit there and I come to it, I bring myself to it, and I find out a piece of myself. You know, I just make myself available and I find out this piece of myself that I didn't know, that I couldn't come to on my own. When I show up at my practice and I start that process, the breathing, the movement, the letting go of way I'm seeing things, and I get into that place, you know, I set that tone through Surya Namaskara. I continue it on, and I sequence not through memory, but through just cellular intellect. I feel like there's just something that happens for me that wakes me up. I don't get up and it gets me up. You know, I can't even, I sometimes compare it to brushing my teeth, but you know, that's more out of fear that I'm going to get cavities.
Yeah.
I'm not practicing out of fear that I'm going to get sick or that I'm going to use again. I've already faced that. I've already slayed that dragon. Now, I'm not saying I wouldn't or couldn't. The tragedy could happen. So, you know, that's one day at a time thing. But this is what still wakes me up daily. Yeah. Is I need to step into that. I need to put my toe in. I need to taste that. I need to be in that place and stand in that place if others are interested also. And it's so rewarding, because I know you in that place. We met in that place. We've, you know, journeyed in that place. And it's just an honor. I mean, it's just such an honor. I could go to places where, you know, I think of upsetting things or challenges that I've had. But all those challenges have given me that consciousness that I just described, and I'd rather stay with that. I'd rather stay respectful. I'd rather stay grateful. I'd rather, you know, I do the chant, and you know, I mean, all the stuff I've learned and information through, you know, even a different language. If I just bring it down to the serenity prayer, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference, it's, you know, that's being in yoga for me. Yeah.
That's beautiful, man. Well, I can't thank you enough, because, you know, like early on in my journey, like, you know, you were a pivotal force for, you know, getting me to go to India to practice with Sharad, and, you know, helping me learn and build my program in the very early stages, and helping me learn how to teach and talk about sharing it to people. I mean, like, you played an integral part to not only my recovery, but to like all of the yoga that I'm doing today. And I, without you, I don't know if I could do it.
Thanks, brother. I remember it all. I actually still, I think, saved the voicemail that you called me from India when you got authorized.
Yeah. That just gave me chills.
Yeah. I mean, I remember, you know, having questions, and you have definitely come full circle, and you're so, it just seems, like I said, I'm not all that cued into a lot of the activities, because we both have families, we both have our lives, but what I see and what I hear is just, you know, really inspiring and awesome. So thanks. Yeah. Thanks for inviting me to this, and yeah, I really appreciate it. And all my love to your family, bro.
All right. Well, appreciate you being on the show, Matthew.
Certainly.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning in. If you want more information about Ashtanga Yoga, visit ashtangayogacolumbus.com. You can also check out my website, which is taylorhuntyoga.com. See you guys next time.